Extracts from notes made by me, Gideon Fell, on the night of Wednesday, August the 19th, 1936. After the village fete in the grounds of Ash Hall, Sir Harvey Gilman told young Dick Markham that his fiancée, Leslie Grant, was a murderer. Her name was Jordan, and she had poisoned three men, although the crimes could not be proved. Next morning, Gilman was found dead in his study, also poisoned, with the doors and windows fastened on the inside. Hugh Minster, the local doctor, had been uneasy about Gilman and had made his suspicions known to me. I called my friend, Superintendent Hatley of Scotland Yard, and when I reached the house in Gallows Lane, I was able to testify that the dead man was not Gilman, but an impostor. His tales about Leslie Grant were a pack of lies, and her so-called victims had never existed, to Markham's great relief. Meanwhile, his close friend, Cynthia Drew, confronted Miss Grant in her own house and insisted that she open the wall safe she'd had installed in her bedroom to reveal its contents. When Hadley and I accompanied Dick Markham to Miss Grant's house, his fiancée was nowhere to be seen. So Dick went up to her room. There's one remarkable feature of life in a small village. I've noticed it before. People leave the front doors open. They drop in and out of each other's houses. Everyone's amazingly trusting.
If you ask me, there are downsides to trusting.
Yes, I'm afraid I have to agree with you. In this particular case, a lot of trouble would have been saved if...
Dr. Fell! Superintendent! We've got to ring for an ambulance!
Have you found her?
What's happened?
I found her in the bedroom, lying on the floor at the foot of the bed. She's got a nasty bruise on her forehead and there's blood trickling down her face.
By thunder! Are you saying somebody came in and attacked Miss Grant while...
No, not Leslie. It's Cynthia. Cynthia Drew. Oh, and the wall safe is wide open and it's empty.
But where's Miss Grant?
I don't know. She seems to have disappeared.
We present The House in Gallows Lane, based on the book Till Death Do Us Part, a Dr. Fell mystery by John Dixon Carr, dramatized for radio by Peter Ling, with Donald Sinden as Dr. Fell. Part 2, The Point of a Pin.
It's all right. She's coming around.
Do you think we should get her to hospital?
She's had a hard knock. The skin's broken. And she's going to have a spectacular bruise for a day or two. But it's nothing to worry about.
Well, if you really... She's opening her eyes.
Dick? Is that you?
Yes. Don't try to sit up. Take it easy.
What happened?
That's what we'd like to know. This is Dr. Fell and Superintendent Hadley from Scotland Yard.
I'm sorry. I don't understand.
No, don't worry, Miss Drew. You've just had a nasty bump on the head.
But you're going to be perfectly fine. And it would help us if you could tell us what had been going on before...
I'll try. This is her bedroom, isn't it? Leslie's room. She came in here and... And then she hit me. I know it sounds absurd,
but... She hit you? You don't mean with that hammer?
No. I brought that with me. I was trying to break open the safe. I suppose now you'll arrest me.
Perhaps if you could begin at the beginning, Miss Drew. Now, take your time.
Well, I wanted to find out what she keeps in that. Oh, it's empty. The safe was locked, and I couldn't get it open. I asked her to unlock it, and that's when she hit me with a mirror.
What?
The hand mirror on the dressing table. Leslie picked it up and there was a bit of a struggle. That's all I can remember.
So where is she now?
Well, how on earth should I know?
Well, she isn't here. She isn't in the house. And as you pointed out, the safe is empty, so I thought perhaps...
What are you saying? You don't imagine I've done anything to her, surely?
Well, no, but...
But now you're beginning to realise she did have something to hide. Something that was kept in the safe, and she's taken it with her.
It doesn't make sense. I can't believe Leslie would do anything
so... Perhaps you don't want to believe it. Perhaps she isn't the spotless angel you think she is. There are some awful rumours going round the village. People think there's something very suspicious about her.
That's ridiculous.
Is it? Then why does Lord Ash give her such a funny look whenever he sees her? And why does Miss Feathers in the post office say that... If that's Leslie, I don't want to speak to her.
Come in.
Excuse me, sir. There was a message for you at the police house. You're to ring Scotland Yard right away.
Right. Thank you, Constable. Look, let's go, Doctor. This could be the information I've been waiting for.
You carry on, my dear chap. I still have one or two questions I'd like to ask.
Right. Well, lead the way, Constable.
Sir.
I'll see you later, Miss Drew.
Now, Miss Drew, there are a few details I'm hoping you might clarify. That is, if you're feeling sufficiently recovered.
Well, of course I'd be glad to help if I can. Oh dear. I'm afraid I do feel a little dizzy.
Yes, of course. You're still looking a bit groggy, old thing. Let me take you home and...
No, you'll do nothing of the kind. If you think I'm going to walk along the street with you looking as if... Please, just leave me alone.
Don't be such an idiot.
Oh, so now I'm an idiot, am I? Well, you don't have to bother about me anymore. You'd better go and look after Leslie, if you can find her. And don't pretend you're in the least concerned about me, because we all know you're not.
And don't forget your hammer and chisel.
Thank you. So glad to have met you, Dr. Fell. Goodbye.
Cynthia, I... Oh, Lord. We've always been such good friends. As a rule, she's a nice, sensible girl.
Yes, I'm sure she is. This situation is putting a great deal of strain on everyone.
Yes, I suppose so. I just wish I knew what's going on. I wish I knew what's happened to Leslie.
Miss Drew said something that interested me. No doubt you can tell me. Who is Lord Ash? And why has he been giving your fiancé funny looks?
Oh, he's the local bigwig. Very decent chap. He lives nearby at Ash Hall, where the village fete took place.
Oh, yes, I remember. Yeah, well, he provided the artillery for the rifle range, didn't he?
That's right.
Well, perhaps we should take a little stroll to Ash Hall. I'm rather keen to meet his lordship.
Come in, gentlemen. This is a great pleasure, Dr. Fell. Please, come and sit down. I don't know if you've met...
Liz, hello, Dick. Well, you have been having fun and games with my career as a murderess, haven't you?
My dear, this is Dr. Gideon Fell, who's been helping the police with their investigations.
I'm delighted to meet you, Miss Grant. I've heard so much about you.
I'm sure you have. And so has everyone in Six Ashes, apparently. Let me see. Was it two husbands I poisoned, or three? I think perhaps I'll take a walk in the garden while Lord Ash explains. I'll see you presently, Dick.
She feels a little shy about all this, and I think you'll agree that's understandable when I show you these.
His lordship opened his bureau, taking out a large velvet bag, which he emptied onto the table. I have never seen anything like it. Jewels poured out, glittering and gleaming like 100 rainbows. A triple-tiered necklace, several bracelets, some dazzling earrings, and a matching choker.
You'll notice the emblem worked into all these pieces. This heraldic device is the Ash coat of arms. You probably saw it on the gates when you came in.
So they all belong to you and your family?
I wish I could say yes. In fact, they now belong to Miss Leslie Grant.
But that's absurd. Leslie doesn't have any jewellery. She hates it.
I beg your pardon. She hates jewellery, but she owns all these. Did you ever hear of a woman called Lily Jordan?
Jordan? Dr. Fell, did you hear that?
Yes, I heard. Please continue your story, sir.
Lily Jordan died the year before last. She was the mother of the young lady you know as Leslie Grant. 40-odd years ago, my elder brother George met Lily in Paris and became infatuated. He wanted to marry her, even though she was a famous courtesan with strings of wealthy lovers. But she refused him. In 1914, George gave her the jewels as a pledge of his love, then went off to join his regiment, swearing he would come back when the war was over and marry her. But he never came back. And I succeeded to the title. When Lily Jordan eventually died, her daughter hated these treasures and everything they stood for. She decided to leave Paris and move to England. She liked the look of Six Ashes and settled here. One day, she recognized the coat of arms on our gates. and realized she had the ash jewels in her possession. And she was afraid she might be charged with unlawful possession of such valuable objects. And what would her neighbors say if they knew her story?
But in fact, you had already recognized her.
Well, I had some photographs of George with the beautiful Lily Jordan. Every time I met Leslie, I saw the resemblance, and it troubled me.
Forgive me, gentlemen. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think you'll want to hear the news from Scotland Yard.
Yes, well, Lord Ashe, this is Superintendent Hadley.
How do you do?
Sir, I found Miss Grant outside, and she told me her side of the story. And now I can add another piece to the jigsaw puzzle. Criminal records have identified the dead man who called himself Harvey Gilman.
Well?
He was Sam Davila, a notorious confidence trickster wanted by police all over Europe.
Good Lord.
And, of course, it was that jewellery he was after. He couldn't get it by breaking into Miss Grant's safe. He was no cracksman, but he was a psychologist, and he could get at them another way, with the assistance of Mr. Markham.
Me?
He spun you that yarn about the three poison victims. If my guess is right, his next move would have been to persuade you to find the combination of the safe, just to prove the lady's guilt or innocence, of course. He had quite a sense of humour, our Sam.
God damn him and his sense of humour.
Well, you've got to admit it was a cunning little scheme, and it might even have come off, but...
But someone got in first and murdered him.
But how could it be murder? I understood the room was locked on the inside.
Yes. The whole plot appears to have been devised in order to incriminate Leslie Grant.
But this morning Leslie came here to give back the jewels. What made her suddenly decide...
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but perhaps I should answer that. I found Cynthia in my bedroom trying to open the safe.
Yes, we heard about that.
She accused me of murder. 3 murders at least. And ordered me to open the safe. She thought that was where I kept the poison. I'm afraid that's when I lost my temper.
So you hit her?
Hit her?
With the hand mirror from the dressing table. Oh,
good gracious, no, nothing like that. She suddenly lunged at me. And she's bigger than me, so I stuck my foot out and tripped her up. She went down like a sack of coals and hit her head on the corner of the dressing table. When I saw she was knocked out, I... Well, I know it was callous of me, but I just let her stay there. And I thought, that's it, I can't stand any more of this. So I took the jewels out of the safe and came straight round to Lord Ashe.
Sit down, my dear.
Look, if you're going to lecture me...
No, I'm not going to lecture you. I'm going to ask you 2 questions. First, when you decided to leave Paris and settle in England, what made you choose this particular village?
I don't really know. I think I must have heard something about it, how pretty and quiet and peaceful it is. Or at least it used to be, before I arrived.
It's amazing that you should have come to this village of all places. Almost as if the jewels had found their own way home. Quite a coincidence.
If it was a coincidence. Huh? You know, could someone have told you about Six Ashes, do you think? A friend in Paris, perhaps?
Not sure. Let me... Oh, yes. I know, it was Madame Fontaine. She was an old friend of my mother's. She was very good to me after Mother died.
Ah, so that's it. It's all falling into place now.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Louise Fontaine was also very good to Sam Davila. She'd been his mistress for years. He must have started laying his plans before you even left Paris.
I'm afraid so. A dangerous man. Which brings me to my second question. I want to ask if you have another dangerous enemy in this village.
No, I don't think so. Unless you mean Cynthia. Except, now I come to think of it, somebody must have told her all that rubbish about me being a murderer. It wasn't you, was it, Dick?
Of course not.
But who else knew about it, apart from you?
Well, only Dr. Minster, and I'm quite sure he wouldn't spread it around. Anyway, he was there when Dr. Fell told us it was all nonsense.
But remember, somebody in this village still believes that yarn. Somebody killed Sam Davila and arranged everything to incriminate Leslie. Which leads us to one inevitable conclusion. Having provided us with this interesting problem, what must the real murderer do next? Huh? Well?
I've no idea.
Arkans of Athens, don't you see? He must now provide us with a solution.
What?
Sam Davila's corpse is found in a locked room, and Leslie Grant, the murderer presumes, will take the blame. But how could she have done it? If we are to arrest her, we must be shown how the trick was done. Unless we're given a clue to the locked room mystery, the whole scheme collapses. Do you follow me?
I see. So you think that...
I think we'll receive some kind of communication to point us in the right direction.
Was that why you asked me
to... Do you mind... Let me finish, please, Hadley. By some means or other, I believe we shall get a message from a well-wisher to provide a clue. I can't say what form the message will take,
Well, how about a telephone call? Don't forget, I had a mysterious phone call this morning, summoning me to the house in Gallows Lane, when I met Cynthia and we discovered the body.
Are you saying that someone hates me so much they're ready to see me hanged for murder?
Oh, surely not, my dear. I really can't believe that.
Dick, why did you go and meet Cynthia this morning? What did she tell you about me?
Nothing. We ran into each other by chance.
Tell me honestly. You don't believe all those lies, do you? That I poisoned three...
Of course I don't. It's just a load of morbid nonsense. I love you, and I believe in you. Surely you must know that.
Thank you. But let me ask you one question. Before these horrors began, we'd arranged to have a cozy little supper to celebrate our engagement. Remember?
Yes, and as soon as all this is cleared up, I'll take you to the best restaurant.
No, I want to celebrate now, tonight. I want to cook supper for you at my house, just the two of us. How about that?
I can't think of anything nicer. What time?
8 o'clock.
I'll be there.
It was late in the afternoon when Hadley and I accompanied Dick Markham to the house in Gallows Lane for the last time. We found the worthy Constable Miller still there, guarding the scene of the crime.
Has the post-mortem result come through yet?
No, sir. They'll ring us as soon as they can.
Right. Any luck with tracing that phone call?
What phone call, sir?
Mr. Markham had a phone call early this morning asking him to come to this house right away.
Oh, that phone call, yes, sir. It was put through from here. The telephone in the hall, at 5:02.
Was it indeed? Now, tell me, Mr. Markham, could it have been Davila who spoke to you?
It might have been. I couldn't recognise the voice. It was a sort of whisper.
Well, it's not likely to have been Davila, is it? He would hardly have invited you here to witness his own demise.
Well, then who?
Perhaps the call was made by whoever took a potshot at him through the window.
Possibly. I understand you actually saw the rifle poking over the garden wall. You saw the shot being fired.
Yes, I did.
If you're thinking there was any trickery about that shot, you can forget it. Everything's been checked. Angle of fire, the hole in the glass. They even checked the bullet they dug out of the wall. It came from the Winchester 2-2 that was found in the bushes, without any shadow of doubt.
Hadley, would you please allow me to question the witness in my own way? May I ask my own questions, or may I not?
I beg your pardon. Sorry if I stepped on your toes. Carry on.
Oh, never mind my toes. Mind you don't step on those confounded drawing pins all over the carpet. I take it they're still where you found them, Mr. Markham?
Yes. Davila must have knocked them off the desk. Anyway, that's not important.
Forgive me if I contradict you. Those drawing pins may be of the utmost importance. This entire case could hang on a drawing pin. After all, learned theologians used to spend hours debating how many angels could dance on the point of a pin. Never underestimate a drawing pin. Even if you don't see the point of it.
I do, sir. Like I told Mr. Markham, the gentleman was trying to pin some gore screens across the windows to keep the wasps out.
That's as may be. But more to the point, we have no idea how Mr. Davila spent the last night of his life. He was alive when you left him here at 11 o'clock, Mr. Markham, and you found him dead at 5:20 this morning. What did he do during his final hours?
He was still in some pain. He asked Dr. Minster to give him something to help him get to sleep.
Well, he can't have slept for long. He got up sometime before 5. Now, why did he do that, I wonder?
Perhaps he came down to make that telephone call. It could have been his voice I heard. You don't suppose... You did say someone would try to send a message.
All right, Constable. See who it is.
Very good, sir.
Still a lot we don't know about Mr. Davila. Apart from his rather surprising taste in reading matter.
Reading matter?
Yeah, this book. Open on the desk. Hazlitt's Essays.
Ah, yes. He wasn't your usual flashy con man by any means. Sam's academic manner was worth $5,000 a year to him. His father was a West Country clergyman. He studied medicine at Oxford, and I'm told he even... Yes, Miller, what is it?
That was the constable from Oxton, sir, with the results of the post-mortem.
Thank you. And let's have a look.
And Dr. Minster's car just pulled up outside. He's brought Miss Drew with him. They're coming in now.
But does no one lock the front door in this village? No. Ah, Dr. Minster. Come in, my dear chap. And Miss Drew, how very nice.
Cynthia has some information that might be useful. I said she should tell you right away.
Well, certainly. Do sit down, my dear.
Thank you.
How are you feeling? Quite recovered from the accident, I hope?
Oh, it wasn't an accident. Leslie struck me quite deliberately with a hand mirror.
Now, I must tell you, she denies that, absolutely. She says you tripped and fell, hitting your head on the dressing table.
That's not true.
You did say you couldn't remember exactly what happened.
Of course, you would try to defend her.
Never mind all that. Dr. Minster, I'm very glad to see you. I believe you were the last person to see the deceased alive, and he asked you to give him something to help him to sleep.
Well, that's correct. His back was very uncomfortable. I gave him a quarter grain of luminol as a painkiller.
Only a quarter grain? He couldn't have taken more than that.
No, I gave it to him myself. Why?
I've just had the report on the post-mortem.
No, you're not going to tell us that he wasn't killed by prussic acid.
Oh, no, the prussic acid killed him. But sometime before his death, he'd also swallowed 3 or 4 grains of luminol.
But that's impossible. I would never have given him such an overdose.
I'm sure you didn't. But who did? Who got him out of bed and lugged him down here? After that dose of luminol, there's no way he could have come downstairs under his own
steam. You and leaving the other side for the moment. I believe you had something to tell us, Miss Drew.
Yes. Last night, or early this morning, when I was in Gallows Lane... Oh, everything seems so confused, but later I tried to remember, and I had a mental picture of this house, and there was someone running away from it.
Someone you knew?
I don't even know if it was a man or a woman. They were in the shadows, under the trees, but I'm certain someone was leaving in a hurry.
That's right. I didn't see him either, but I heard him running off into the bushes after he put a bullet through the window.
No. That's the point. It can't have been the same person, because this was before I heard the shot. After that, I'm afraid everything else went out of my head.
By Jupiter! So there were 2 visitors. One who fired the rifle, and another who left the house earlier... having just murdered him.
Excuse me, sir. Can I say something?
Not now, Miller. We're all very...
It's important, sir. I mean, I'd have mentioned it before. Only up to now, I thought the gentleman had committed suicide. Nobody said nothing to me about it being murder.
All right. Go on.
But the thing is, I was on late duty last night. I was cycling back along Gallows Lane on my way to the police house, and I went right past here about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, what about it?
That's when I saw someone standing outside this front door, as if they were waiting to go inside. It was real dark, of course, but she was wearing a white blouse, so I couldn't help noticing...
She? Who are you talking about?
Well, sir, it was Miss Leslie Grant.
It was late when Dick Markham left Gallows Lane, and too many questions were chasing one another through his brain.
I know Bert Miller's telling the truth, but somebody must be lying. Cynthia? Or Leslie? I know them both so well. I can't believe either of them would... I mean, Cynthia's a little jealous, but that doesn't mean she'd... No, of course not. As for Leslie, she must be cursing me now. It's past 8 already, and she'll be there waiting, with the supper getting cold. She was so desperate to cook something special for me. But first, I'd better go home and tidy up. If only I could stop asking myself all these damn fool questions.
When he reached home and opened the front door, he saw a light in his study. A visitor was waiting for him.
Oh, Lord Ash.
I'm sorry if I startled you. I dropped in on the off chance that I might find Dr. Fell with you, or the superintendent. I already tried the pub, but they weren't there.
No, I left them at Gallows Lane. Why, is there something wrong?
Yes, I'm afraid there might be. You see, I was going through my gun room half an hour ago and I discovered one of them was missing.
Oh, you mean the Winchester rifle? Yes, they're putting it in for forensic testing because it was used to fire the bullet that smashed...
Yes, I know that. No, I'm not talking about the Winchester. It's my old service revolver that's disappeared. And some ammunition with it. I thought I should let the police know.
And you've no idea who might have taken it?
No. So many people have been in and out this weekend, borrowing the rifles and bringing them back, helping to clean them and put them away. It could be almost anyone.
I see. Well, if you want to try Gallows Lane, you might find the superintendent still there.
Right.
I'm sorry not to be more helpful,
no,
but I'm rather pushed for time. I was supposed to be having supper with Leslie at 8 o'clock, and now it's getting on for 9.
The question is, will you still find her waiting when you get there?
What do you mean?
I had a long talk with her earlier today, and she's rather upset about your, friendship with Cynthia. If I were you, I'd get round there as soon as you can and try to patch things up.
Following Lord Ashe's advice, he set off at once. And by now it was getting dark, and the eerie twilight only added to his confusion.
Does she love me, or does she hate me? If she hates me, what's the good of going to see her? What sort of supper will she have prepared, I wonder? The supper she cooked specially for me. No, I mustn't think that. It's impossible. I know she'd never do anything so. Oh, nearly there now. There's her house, silhouetted against the night sky, and a light in the window. So she must be there, waiting. I've only got to walk past the post office, open the garden gate, and then everything will be all right. There'll be nothing to worry about. I must believe that. Nothing at all. God, what's that?
But the shot had not come from Leslie's house. It had come from inside the post office. The door was closed and the blind was down, but Dick could see a line of light beneath it. He hammered on the door.
Hello? Who's there? Hello?
To his surprise, the door swung open. A single light bulb burned dimly over the counter. Below it, a canvas sack had been ripped open. The floor was strewn with envelopes of all shapes and sizes. Behind the counter, Miss Feathers tried to hold herself upright, clawing at the wire mesh with one hand and clutching a torn fragment of paper in the other, as a stain of blood spread slowly across her blouse.
Miss Feathers! What's happened? Who was it?
I wouldn't give up the letter.
What letter? That scrap of paper?
Here, you take it.
She thrust it into his hands. The torn corner of an envelope and a small fragment from the sheet of paper which had been inside it. And on that paper, a few typewritten words, all that remained of the original letter. Dick read the words in blank disbelief.
Why be such fools? If you want to know how Leslie Grant did it...
He recognized the cranky capital G, which always printed unevenly, and the lowercase W, which was always too faint. The letter had been typed on his own machine. And then he heard running footsteps from the kitchen at the back of the shop.
Who the hell?
He flung open the counter flap and ran through the kitchen into the backyard.
Hey, you! Stop!
Beyond the waist-high wall, he could see Leslie's garden and a moving shadow that disappeared into the darkness, running towards her house. Then a glimmer of light as her kitchen door opened and then closed. Someone had gone inside. Inside Leslie's house. And she was there, alone. Without stopping to think, Dick scrambled over the wall and collided with someone on the other side.
Oh, what the...
Bert, what are you doing here?
Mr. Markham! I was with Dr. Fell on my way to see Miss Grant. Then we heard a gun go off.
Miss Feathers has been shot. Go and fetch help right away.
But where's the gunman?
Inside Leslie's house. Don't worry, he won't get far. You look after the old lady.
Right. Dick raced across the garden and into Leslie's house. The kitchen was empty, but he found her in the dining room, sitting at the table laid for two. The tall candles were still unlit. Seeing Dick, she rose to her feet, then turned away, unable to face him directly.
Your supper's in the kitchen. I'm afraid it's cold, but that's hardly my fault. I suppose when it came to the point, you couldn't bear to eat with the daughter of Lily Jordan.
Don't talk rot. Just tell me this. Who came into this house just now?
Into this house? Nobody.
Through the back door, not half a minute ago.
Nobody came in except you. I've been here all the time.
I suppose he could have gone the other way, through the scullery in the breakfast room. He or she, whoever it is, could get into the hall that way without your knowing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Look, I don't want to alarm you, but somebody broke into the post office and tried to kill Miss Feathers. Obviously the same person who killed Davila, and now he's in this house. It's all right, I'll answer the door, but you're coming with me.
Take your hands off me!
I'm not letting you out of my sight until I know who that is at the door.
No trouble, young girl. I need hardly add that the front door was, of course, open as usual. And why are you manhandling this young lady?
Will you let go of me? Or is this the way you carry on with Cynthia?
Forget about Cynthia. Doctor, I've just come from the post office where Miss Feathers has...
I know. Hadler's there now.
And the gunman is somewhere in this house. We'll have to search the whole place.
All in good time. First, I suggest we sit down and have a little talk.
Talk? For heaven's sake! Let me get Leslie away from here before...
It would be far better if she remains here, I assure you.
Even with a murderer in the house?
Oh, yes. Even with a murderer in the house. I notice you're still clutching some scraps of paper.
I take it you understand what has taken place at the post office?
I think I've got a rough idea, yes.
Very well. Suppose you tell us about it.
You said that we could expect a communication from the murderer, and I suggested it might be a phone call. And Superintendent Hadley began to say something like, "Was that why you asked me to?" But you shut him up quickly. I only tumbled to it just now. It's the old poison pen trick, isn't it?
But what's that got to do with
it? It's what they do when there's a poison pen outbreak. With the help of the post office, all the stamps sold to a suspected person have a secret mark, so they can prove who sent them. Dr. Fell guessed that our murderer wouldn't risk another phone call, which could easily be traced, but he might send an anonymous letter. So with the cooperation of Miss Feathers...
Who is now on her way to the hospital, where I trust she'll soon make a good recovery.
Then the murderer did write a letter.
Oh, yes. To be on the safe side, he nipped into my cottage and wrote the blasted thing on my typewriter and posted it. Then he had second thoughts. That's why he broke into the post office and tried to get it back. Right, Doctor?
Absolutely right.
So everything happened just as you said. You told us Leslie would be accused by an anonymous message. You said Davila's murder was a deliberate attempt to incriminate Leslie. And you were right again.
Well, no. I'm afraid I wasn't. In fact, I think I said at the time that it was hard to believe.
I don't follow.
We were all so busy concentrating on the mystery man who filled Davila up with prussic acid and slipped out of a house that was locked on the inside, we overlooked his accomplice, who fired a rifle through the window.
Well, whoever he was a rotten shot. He missed his target by a mile.
I fear I must contradict you again. He didn't miss the target. He hit it. Whang in the gold.
But the bullet never even touched Davila.
Davila wasn't the target. He was already dead by then. The target was the window pane, and the marksman and the poisoner were one and the same person. Ah, that'll be Hadley. He's far too well-mannered to walk in without permission. I wonder if you'd mind...
No, you stay here. I'll go.
This is my house. I'll go.
Let's get this straight. You say the window...
The murderer poisoned Davila, then prepared to leave the house.
With the doors and windows locked on the inside?
Ah, yes. And on the way out, the murderer made a phone call to you, telling you to come at once. Then this mysterious figure ran out of the house, along the lane, and round the back of the garden, in time to hide behind the wall and fire his rifle through the window.
Hey! What the dickens are you playing at, Fell? Are you out of your mind?
No more than usual. And please don't interrupt me now. I'm just getting to the interesting part, by which I mean the windows. Now, let me just open these curtains in order to illustrate my theory.
That's enough. Don't say any more.
You can't stop now. What about the windows?
They are, you see, ordinary sash windows. Very like the ones at Gallows Lane. To open the window... I push the metal catch back so it lies flat, so. And now I can slide the window up. And to close it, the catch is pulled forward until it's at right angles to the frame.
Do you want the whole village to hear you?
Just a minute. Where's Leslie? She didn't come back when the superintendent walked in.
Not the whole village, just a small, select audience.
Dr. Fell, where is Leslie?
Of course, it only takes a slight pressure to move the catch into the closed position. That's what I was waiting for.
You bloody fool, you let this happen.
Yes, God help me, so I did. There was no other way, you see.
That shot came from upstairs. The room above. Leslie's room.
Dick ran to the door, across the hall and up the stairs, racing to Leslie's bedroom.
Dick, who fired that gun?
Leslie.
Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't understand. I thought you
My room's locked. Someone's in there.
Stand back. Out of the way, please.
Don't go in, either of you.
But who is it? Not Cynthia?
Good heavens, no. The only person with the means and the motive. Dr. Hugh Minster. At the end of that dreadful evening, Hadley and I were having a much-needed drink in the back room at the pub, together with Dick and Leslie.
I still can't get over it. Dr. Minster, of all people... Trying to put the blame on me.
No, my dear. Now, that's where we were all misled. There was never any intention to put the blame on you. We were meant to assume that the murder was committed by someone who believed every word of Davila's lies. So the one person we couldn't possibly suspect was the man who doubted him right from the start, and even called me in to confirm his suspicions.
What was it that put you on the right track?
And a couple of things puzzled me. One, why did the fake Harvey Gilman tell those lies, which were solely intended to convince you and no one else, in the presence of a third party? The local GP. He had no reason to tell Dr. Minster. In fact, he hardly seemed to notice he was there. And that made me wonder whether the good doctor might be somehow involved in the scheme.
And two, the mystery of the vanishing rifle.
Yes. In all the confusion, when it started to rain, almost anyone could have taken it.
But how? I mean, you can't stick a rifle in your pocket or inside your coat.
You could hide it in a golf bag. And Dr. Minster, from the pitch and putt stall, carried a bag of golf clubs. You told me so yourself.
Yeah. And then there was Davila's background. Minster said his suspicions were aroused when Davila referred to the two chambers of the heart instead of four.
Yeah. Whereas your account of Davila's career told me he'd studied medicine at Oxford. No medical man could possibly commit such a howler.
No.
So do you think Davila had some sort of hold over Minster? Some secret from his past, perhaps?
Oh, Dick, that sounds almost like the plot of one of your plays.
Strange, but true, unfortunately. The doctor's story wasn't a pretty one, but all too human. Years ago, when he was hard up and desperate, he took a post in a squalid London nursing home, where he performed illegal operations. Davila found out. So when he came over here with designs on the jewellery, he roped the doctor into his plan. Imagine the poor chap's feelings. He thought his past was dead and buried, but it had come back to haunt him.
I know how he must have felt.
Yes. So he decided Davila must die. And when he heard the so-called secrets of your past, the scheme was handed to him on a plate. Do you remember, Dick, during that first evening, he thought he heard someone outside the window?
Yes. He went and opened the curtains to look out. Was there really someone out there?
Oh, yes. It was Cynthia. A good girl, though perhaps a little erratic. But Minster was more interested in the window itself. He saw the pinholes in the frame, where the gauze screens had been pinned up, and realized that one pinhole, more or less, would never be noticed. That's when the whole idea fell into his head.
First of all, he'd need a bullet hole through the glass.
Right, and a length of stout thread doubled over into a loop, which he could push through the hole with a drawing pin in the frame to act as a pulley. He only had to slip the looped end over the metal catch.
And a few hours later, in the middle of the night, after he drugged and poisoned Davila, that was precisely what he did. He locked the doors, climbed out of the window, pulled the sash down after him, and very carefully pulled on the double thread to draw the catch forward and lock the window.
Yeah. And then he pulled on one end of the thread until it was all out. And hey presto, the room was locked on the inside.
No, I'm sorry, that's not possible. I was there when the shot was fired, remember? The bullet hole wasn't there in the middle of the night.
Oh, yes, it was. That was when the real shot was fired. The one you witnessed at dawn was a blank cartridge, for your special benefit.
It was a neat little dodge, and he thought he'd got away with it, until he made his mistake over the anonymous letter and lost his head.
Then everything went wrong. He took refuge in Miss Grant's house, hoping to escape, until I raised my voice to let him know we were on to him.
No.
That's when he put an end to it all. Poor devil.
There's one thing I still don't understand.
You're going to ask me why I was in Gallows Lane at 3 a.m. You really thought I might be the guilty party, didn't you?
Well, yes. Well, no, not really. I mean...
I don't blame you. The fact is, I suffer from insomnia, and when I'm worried about something, it's particularly bad. That night, I hardly slept a wink. I kept thinking about Davila and the things he'd said. So I decided to go and see him to try and set my mind at rest. I rang the doorbell, but there was no reply. So at last, I gave up and went home. I should have told you, but when I heard he was dead, I was too scared. I'm sorry, Dick. I'm not much good to you, am I? Nervous tantrums, chronic insomnia.
I can promise you one thing. When we're married, you'll never be troubled by insomnia again. I'll see to that.
Last orders, gentlemen, please.
Oh, say, certainly. A toast to the happy couple. Same again. All round.
In part two of The House in Gallows Lane, based on the book Till Death Do Us Part by John Dixon Carr, Dr. Gideon Fell was played by Donald Sinden and Superintendent Hadley by John Hartley. Dick Markham, Robert Portal, Leslie Grant, Alison Pettit, Dr. Minster, Christopher Wright, Lord Ashe, Michael Cochrane, Cynthia Drew, Rachel Atkins, Police Constable Bert Miller, Brian Parr. The House in Gallows Lane was dramatized for radio by Peter Ling and directed by Enid Williams.